Let's read White Fang. Chapter 1, The She-Wolf. As night fell, Henry and Bill heard the first cry, a horrible wail terrifying in the stillness. The two men looked at each other. Then another cry came, another. Wolves!
They are after us, Henry, said Bill.
Best set up camp and get the fire started, said Henry. They don't like fire.
The two men ate their food while the dogs huddled together.
Not like them dogs to stay so close to camp, said Bill.
At that moment, more shrill wolfish cries ripped the air.
They got ears, our dogs, said Henry. They know where they're safest. They'd rather eat dinner than be dinner.
Bill looked thoughtful.
Henry, he said, how many dogs we got?
Six. You know, we got six.
Yeah, we got six dogs. I get one fish to each dog, but I'm telling you, Henry, I was one fish short.
Bill stopped and looked at his friend, waiting for the full meaning of what he had said to sink in.
You must have counted wrong, said Henry. I got out six fish and had to go back for another for all 1 year, said Bill. That's seven fish, seven dogs had fish, I'm telling you the truth.
Henry counted dogs again.
Well, there's six now, he said,
looking at his friend as if he was mad. Bill shook his head.
I saw seven, Henry. I saw seven dogs.
Henry sighed.
Bill, I reckon this place is getting to you. You're losing your grip. Now let's get some sleep.
Close by, a pair of eyes like burning coals broke the darkness, then another pair and another. Next morning, the two men woke early. Bill counted the dogs.
Henry, he said, how many dogs we got?
10. I guess you're seeing 10 dogs now, Bill.
Wrong, cried Bill. We've got 5. Old Fatty's gone.
Gone? Cried Henry, rushing out to count the dogs. Bill was right. There were only 5 dogs.
That old fool dog, Fatty, sighed Bill. He must have run out in the night and strayed into the jaws.
You and a fool dog shouldn't commit suicide like that, said Henry. Still, he never was the sharpest guard in the pack, that Fatty.
The next morning, Henry was heating up supper when he heard a sharp squeal of pain. Bill was standing over the dogs with a stick in his hand.
I got a whack at it, he said.
What did it look like? Asked Henry.
It looked like a wolf, said Bill, but it acted more like a dog.
Must be a tame wolf, said Henry. Must be, to come right into camp at the fitting time.
That night, the circle of burning eyes appeared in the blackness once more. Only this time, they drew closer.
I wish we was back home right now, muttered Henry. I wish we'd never set food out here.
In the morning, another dog was gone, Froggy, the strongest dog in the pack.
And he was no fool, Bill said.
That night, a long shadow glided right into the camp. Then all of a sudden, it moved into the firelight. It was a she-wolf.
That's the one I walloped, whispered Henry. She's been leading our dogs away.
There was a loud crack as a log fell into the fire, and the she-wolf vanished. The following morning, another dog, Spanker, was gone. Back on the trail, Henry stopped suddenly and gasped. In plain view stood the she-wolf from the night before.
It's her,
gasped Will. This was the creature that had tricked half of the dogs into the jaws of the rest of the wolf pack, and now it was hunting them. It was large for a wolf and an odd reddish-gray color. It glared at them hungrily.
Must be some kind of wolf dog, said Henry.
Bill had had enough.
I can't stand it, he screamed. She's not getting any more of our dogs.
The creature turned and ran into the forest, and before Henry could stop him, Bill stumbled after it.
That was the last Henry saw of his friend. Later that day, a search party found Henry and the last of his dogs, crouching in his blankets, half made with cold and fear. Chapter 2. The Little Gray Cub. She-wolf had indeed led the pack on their desperate hunt for food. Now she led them away from the search party. She knew this meant danger. Running with her was her new mate, an old battle-scarred wolf with one eye. One day, they split from the pack to hunt together, but She-Wolf was restless. She seemed to be looking for something, stopping now and again to search rocks and overhanging banks. Arriving at the mouth of a cave, she sniffed, looked around, and then crept through its narrow entrance. It was small, but cozy and dry. She-Wolf lay down. This was the place she'd been looking for. Old One Eye went in search of food, but he was unlucky and came back with nothing. At the mouth of the cave, something made him stop dead. Faint, strange sounds were coming from inside. Then came a warning snarl from his mate. He slowly crept inside. Snuggled between She-Wolf's legs were five tiny whimpering bundles. She-Wolf eyed him, growling. These were her first cubs, but instinct told her that some fathers would kill their helpless newborns. But she had nothing to fear from One Eye. He was floated with a fatherly instinct to feed his cubs, and he set off again to hunt. When he returned with food, She-Wolf let him come a little closer to the cubs. He was doing what a wolf father should. He was helping to look after the babies they had brought into the world. One of the cubs was different from his brothers and sisters who had their mother's reddish fur. He alone had the pure gray wolf coat of his father. His rasping growl was the loudest, and he could roll the other cubs over with a quick swipe of his paw. The first month of his life he spent snuggling into the warmth of his mother, never moving far from her side. His whole world was the shadowy safety of the cave. Then one day he noticed that one wall of the cave was different. This was the cave entrance that let in a little light. As time passed, he longed to go towards that wall of light. But when he tried, his mother gave him a sharp whack on his nose. She knew he was too young to go outside. This was his first lesson, that taking risks can be painful. Then came a time when there was no food for the little family, and One Eye and She-Wolf grew weak with hunger. The cubs simply curled up and went to sleep, four of them. The little gray cubs' brothers and sisters would never wake again. Then there was no more play finding. He had to play alone. Then one day his father stopped coming through the wall of light. Only She-Wolf knew the reason. Following One Eye's usual trail, the left fork by the stream, she had found his body under a tree. It was clear there had been a huge fight and that the most vicious of creatures, the lynx, was to blame. She felt the loss deeply, but knew that life must go on. She had her cub to feed and protect. Motherhood is the most powerful force in nature. There would come a time when She-Wolf would again take the left fork to the lynx lair for the sake of her little gray cub. Chapter 3. In the Big Wide World. The day came that the little cub finally went through the wall of light, which was the entrance to the cave. He was growing up and he simply had to know what lay beyond. At first, he was almost blinded by the brightness of the big wide world. But when nothing happened, he forgot to be scared. He sniffed at the grass and he scrambled onto a fallen tree trunk, but the rotten bark gave way and he went trembling. He fell right into a nest of chicks. At first he was terrified, but he was a born hunter, and without even thinking he began catching and eating them. It was a wonderful game, and how clever he was. Then all of a sudden the mother hen returned in a feathered frenzy. It was his first battle. He was a fierce little wolf and he was afraid of nothing. He growled at her. She gave him a violent peck on his nose, sensing it that didn't know how to defend himself. The mother bird pecked again and again at his poor nose. He began to whimper. He didn't like this at all. The fight went out of him and he scampered off shamefully to hide in the bushes. As he lay down, he felt a rush of air and a huge winged creature swept past. A hawk. It had barely missed him. Then he saw the hawk snatch up the mother hen in its powerful claws. He lay there for a long time, shivering. That was another big lesson. Live things were food, but some of them could hurt. It was better to eat little things. He felt a rush of pride. He had caught his own food, and he had fought a big bird and would do it again. Then he remembered his mother. Suddenly he wanted her more than anything. He felt lonely and small and desperate to be home. Back in the cave, he anxiously awaited his mother. She was out looking for him. When she returned, she was too overjoyed to find him safe to punish him. She licked him and then curled around him, and they both drifted off to sleep. Chapter 4. Tooth and Claw. The cub learned quickly. He held grudges too. If he met a mother hen, he would fly into a fury, remembering the pecks on his nose from his first day out of the cave. Famine came again, and for a while, neither mother nor cub had anything to eat. Then one day, She-Wolf brought home some meat. It was strange stuff, different from anything the cub had smelled or tasted before, and it was all for him. Little could he know what his mother had taken the left fork by the stream, by the lair of the lynx, and stolen a kitten. As he finished his meal, he heard his mother snarling in a strange and terrible way. He shivered with fear. The lynx was mad with rage at the loss of her child, and she had tracked She-Wolf to her cave. In the glare of the afternoon light, the lynx crouched at the cave entrance. A rasping scream left no doubt what she meant to do. The cub and his mother were trapped. The lynx hurled herself inside the cave, and She-Wolf leaped up in her. Snarling and screeching, the two mothers fought like demons. The lynx ripping and tearing with her teeth and claws, She-Wolf using her teeth alone. Seeing his mother in such danger, the cub sank his teeth into the wildcat's leg. Then he clung on for dear life. Although he didn't know it, this is probably what saved their lives. The lynx lashed out at the cub, ripping his shoulder, but he had slowed her down. After a brief, vicious scrap, She-Wolf put an end to her once and for all. They had won, but at a price. The cub licked his mother's wounds. He knew she was weak and sick. For a week, she never left the cave. Then at last, her strength returned and she was ready to hunt again. This time, the cub went with her. She-Wolf noticed the change in her child. He was full of confidence from their victory over the lynx. They had fought a wildcat and lived. The cub now knew another law of the wild. Eat or be eaten. Kill or be killed. 5. A New Life. The cub came upon them suddenly, taking a different path down to the stream. He smelled a strange scent. In front of him were 5 live creatures. It was his first sight of men, but the live things did not show their teeth and growl. Sat there, silent and mysterious. The cub's instincts told him to turn and run, but a new feeling made him stay. He was spellbound by a sense of mastery and power. A man got up and walked towards him. Towering over him, the man bent down. Cub's hair bristled. His lips went into a snarl, showing his little fangs. The man laughed. "Look," he called to his friends. "White fangs!" And he stretched out hand. The cub lay still until the hand touched him. Then he lashed out and sank his teeth into the man's fingers. At once, he received a sharp smack on his head. At that, all the fight went out of him. He sat down and wailed his terror and his hurt. The man laughed, but then he heard his mother coming. She-Wolf bounded up, snarling and showing her razor-like fangs. The cub gave a joyful little cry and scuttled to meet her. The man animals backed off hastily. Then a cry went up from one of the men.
Kish!
The cop felt his mother quiver at the sound.
Kish!
Said the man again sharply. At once his mother, the she-wolf, the fearless one, crouched down on her belly. She wagged her tail, making peace signs. The cub couldn't understand it. These strange creatures must be all-powerful for his mother to behave like this. The men crowded round She-Wolf. They stroke and patter her, and she didn't resist. The cub crouched by his mother and did his best to copy her.
Kish,
said one of the men called Gray Beaver.
Her father was a wolf, but her mother was a dog.
Yes, and she ran away,
said another. Man called Three Eagles.
She has lived with wolves. See, this cub is the result of it.
Plain that his mother is Kish, said Gray Beaver. But his father was wolf. Therefore, he has both wolf and dog in him too. Kish was my brother's dog, and my brother is dead. So I claim this cub as mine.
He looked at the cub and smiled. His fangs are very white. I'll name him White Fang. Gray Beaver fetched a leather strap. He tied one end around Kish's neck and the other around the tree. White Fang followed and lay down beside his mother. Gray Beaver reached down and rolled him on his back. White Fang felt helpless, lying in such a silly way, and his whole wolf nature rebelled against it. He growled softly, but the man animal did not smack him. He just laughed. Then all of a sudden, the hand rubbed his tummy playful, and White Fang felt a new feeling. It was pleasure. And when the man rubbed behind his ears, the cub felt all his fear melt away. After a while, there were more noises. The rest of the tribe was returning. With them came some new animals. White Fang had never seen dogs before, but knew that they were like his own kind, but not quite. The dog smelled Kish and her cub and attacked, biting and snapping at them. Kish then fought for Fight Fang, and the cub could hear the shouts of the man animals and the yelps of the dogs as they were beaten away. Noise died down. He saw again the power of men and felt that they had been fair. The dogs had deserved to be beaten. A small man animal untied Kish and led her away towards the village. White Fang followed, feeling worried and uncomfortable at this new adventure. He was awestruck at the village and its towering teepees. Was just gathering up the courage to explore when a puppy, larger and older than he was, came swaggering towards him. The puppy's name was Lip Lip, and he was a bully. Lip Lip carried his lips and snarled, so White Fang did the same. They circled each other, bristling and snapping. White Fang was starting to enjoy himself. It was a sort of game. Then suddenly, without warning, Lip Lip leaped at him, slashing his leg, yelping with the shame. The little cub ran back to his mother, who had been tied to another tree at the end of a long leash. Later that day, White Fang was watching Gray Beaver doing something with sticks and branches. Was a strange mist rising from the pile of wood. Then suddenly, a living thing appeared, brilliant orange, twisting and turning. The cub had never seen fire, but it was drawn towards it. He crawled towards the flame. He heard Gray Beaver make a chuckling noise and knew the sound was friendly. Then White Fang's nose touched the fire. The savage orange thing attacked his nose. He scrambled back, crying pain. His mother heard his cries and strained uselessly to rescue him. But Gray Beaver laughed and laughed and called the rest of the camp to watch. Soon they were all laughing at poor little White Fang with his burned nose. It was the worst pain he had ever known. But the more he cried, the more the man animals laughed. And then he felt ashamed, and he now knew what laughter meant, that they thought him foolish. He fled once again to his mother, the one creature in the world who was not laughing. Night came. White Fang lay by his mother's side, longing for the quiet of the stream and their cozy cave. There were too many of these dogs and men animals all squabbling and snapping and making a noise. He watched the
man animals. They were wonder workers, magic makers, and had power over all things, alive and not alive. They could make that vicious things called fire.
Chapter 6. Outcast.
The more White Fang learned about man animals, the more he respected them. When they walked, he got out of their way. When they called his name, he went to them. When they were angry, he hid. Belonged to them as the dogs belonged to them. They were gods and he was in their power. But the bully Lip Lip made his life miserable. Older and stronger, the puppy had chosen White Fang as his victim. He was never happier than when he was tormenting the newcomer. White Fang would have loved to join in with the other puppies, playing and running together. But as soon as White Fang appeared, Lip Lip would attack him and drive him away. After some months, Grey Beaver decided that Quiche would not run away, and he set her free. White Fang was thrilled. As long as he stayed by her side, Lip Lip wouldn't dare come near. One morning soon after this, White Fang saw the man animal, three eagles, loading a canoe. All of a sudden, his mother was taken aboard too. White Fang rushed after it, but the canoe sped off. Wild with panic, the cub jumped in the water and swam after it. Grey Beaver called him back, but he was so scared of losing his mother, he didn't take any notice. Then Grey Beaver jumped into another canoe and set off after him. When he caught the cub, he gave him a terrible beating. White Fang cried and cried with pain. That night, he thought of his mother and howled so loudly that he woke Grey Beaver. The man animal came over and bit him again. White Fang learned then that men could be very cruel and he wanted to run away, but the memory of his mother held him back. He would stay and wait for her, however long it took. Now White Fang's mother could no longer protect him. Lip Lip bullied him all the time. Soon White Fang began to grow more savage and cunning. If there was trouble in the camp, whether it was fighting among the dogs, squabbling among the man animals, or a piece of stolen meat, White Fang usually got the blame. The other dogs knew that he was different. They sensed the wildness in him that they did not have themselves. It was a hard time for White Fang. The tooth of every dog was against him and he was always ready for an attack. But White Fang had the spirit of his mother and his father. The battle scarred one eye. However often he was beaten by Lip Lip, nothing could crush this. Chapter 7. Friends and Enemies. White Fang never forgot his mother or stopped longing for the wildness of his early cubhood. But by and by, he begins to settle down. Grey Beaver never pitied him again, but he sometimes threw him a hunk of meat and shooed away the other dogs if they tried to steal it. That winter, Grey Beaver set out on a long trip overland with his big sled. While his young son Mitsa had a smaller one pulled by a team of puppies. There were 7 puppies on Mitsa's team, including White Fang. The leader was White Fang's old enemy Lip Lip. At first, Lip Lip thought it an honor to be leader, but he soon found it was the worst place to be. All day long, the other dogs were snapping at his heels. Worse still, Mitsa gave him extra meat in front of the other dogs, and they hated him for it. Lip Lip became an outcast, just as he had once made White Fang. One day, Mitsa was collecting firewood in the forest when a gang of boys from another tribe attacked him. A mad rush of anger rose in White Fang. Mitsa, his master, was being hurt. He leaped at the boys, snarling and snapping as they fled in terror. When Mitsa told the story in camp, Grey Beaver gave White Fang a huge piece of meat. The cub then lay down, full and happy, by the fire. He had just learned the value of a new lesson. Protect your master and you will be rewarded. When spring came, Grey Beaver and his team went back home. White Fang was now a year old, although a long way from being fully grown. After Lip Lip, he was the biggest yearling in camp. As the months went by, White Fang grew even stronger. From his mother, he had a dog size and cleverness, and from his father, the cunning and strength of a wolf.
When White Fang was 3 years old, there was a great famine in the camp. There was no food, not even for the man animals, and the old and the weak were dying from hunger. Several dogs, including White Fang, ran off into the forest to find food for themselves. Time passed, and one day White Fang was out hunting when he sensed something behind him. He knew the scent, and it was not pleasant. He turned. A dog stood on his path in front of him. It was his old enemy, Lip Lip. The two animals stared at each other. The hairs on White Fang's back bristled and the old anger flooded back. He snarled. Lip Lip backed away. Then White Fang sprang at him, knocking him to the ground. He showed no mercy to the old bully. He was even at last. Not long after this, he returned to the village. The famine was over and smelled food. He trotted boldly into Grey Beaver's teepee. Mitsa welcomed him with happy cries and gave him a whole fish. Chapter 8. The Fighting Wolf. When White Fang was 5 years old, Grey Beaver set off on the long journey to Fort Yukon to sell furs. White Fang was now head of the dog team and was a fast and fearless leader. When they arrived, he saw more man animals than he had seen in his life. Many of them had pale skin. Every few days, a steamship would arrive and the pale man animals would come ashore with their dogs. These were soft, silly creatures that made a lot of noise. However, some made the mistake of trying to attack White Fang. He enjoyed this game. As they rushed at him, he would spring to one side. While they stood stupidly wondering where he had gone, he would knock them off their feet. He could have killed them with one slash of his teeth. But White Fang was cunning. He knew that man animals were angry when the dogs were killed, so he slunk away and let other dogs race in for the kill. They were the ones who were punished, not him. Sometimes the men who lived at the fort came down to see this wolfish dog, which was never wrong-footed. But the man who loved the dog fights more than any other was Beauty Smith. He would run down at the first sound of the steamship's whistle. No one knew Beauty's real name, but he was far from beautiful and a cowardly, cruel bully. Beauty Smith was thrilled by White Fang's strength and cunning. And he also saw that he could make a lot of money from him. Beauty knew that White Fang belonged to Grey Beaver. He took to visiting him, offering money, but Grey Beaver refused. White Fang was the strongest sled dog he had ever owned and the best leader. There was no dog like him anywhere in the country. No, White Fang was not for sale, but Beauty Smith was cunning. Every visit he brought whiskey for Grey Beaver, and one day he tricked him into selling his dog. White Fang hated this new pale man animal. Something told him that Beauty was bad through and through, but it couldn't know that the day Beauty took him away would be the worst in his life. Beauty Smith was cruel beyond anything White Fang had ever known and the worst kind of coward. He was too scared to fight a man, but with a heavy club, he felt powerful enough to beat a dog. Beauty changed White Fang in a pen so he could hardly move. He teased and taunted him until the dog went into a rage. Then he beat him without mercy. White Fang learned to hate as he had never hated before. Beauty was doing this for a reason. One day, some men came to the pen. Beauty took the chain from White Fang's neck. The dog was mad with a spitting, snarling rage, a fighting dog in peak condition. The door of the pen opened. White Fang stopped for a second, puzzled. Then another dog was shoved inside. It was huge. White Fang leaped at it with a flash of fangs that ripped at the dog's throat. The dogs lunged at White Fang, but the wolf dog was too clever. He leaped and again, slashing with his fang, and the other dog lunged no more. The men cheered and clapped. Big as he was, the other dog had No chance. Beauty Smith grinned from ear to ear. White Fang began to look forward to these fights. This was the only time he was ever free from his chain. One day, three dogs were put against him in a row. One another day, a full-grown wolf. Then two dogs were set on him at once. Sometimes White Fang would be injured, but Beauty did not care. He was becoming rich, betting on his dog. Soon, White Fang was famous. They called him the Fighting Wolf. When the first snows came, Beauty locked him in a cage and took him upriver to Dawson Town. There, men paid to stare at him and poke him with sticks. He raged and snored at them. Hate had become his whole life, and why not? Life had become a living hell. Dog fighting was against the law in that town, and so Beauty would take him into the woods at night. Men brought their most ferocious dogs to challenge. The Fighting Wolf. It was a savage land, and the fights were to the death. But White Fang was never beaten. Soon, dog owners did not want to risk their dogs against him. So Beauty set a full-grown lynx on him. White Fang fought like a demon and won. Then one day, a gambler called Tim Keenan arrived in Dawson. He owned the first bulldog that had ever been seen in that country. It was clear that White Fang would have to fight this strange, powerful-looking dog, and for days people talked of nothing else. Chapter 9. White Fang fights for his life. In the forest, Beauty Smith unchained his dog and stood back. For once, White Fang didn't make the first move. He was puzzled. This dog wasn't like any dog he had ever seen. It was short and squat and hairless. It just stood still and stared at White Fang. The crowd yelled, "Go get him, Cherokee! Eat him up!" But Cherokee turned his head and blinked, wagging his tail. Tim Keenan started talking to his dog in a low voice. The bulldog began to growl. Then White Fang sprang. The crowd gasped. White Fang had moved more like a cat than a dog, slashing at the bulldog with his deadly fangs and leaping away. The bulldog was bleeding, but it didn't even snarl. He just walked towards White Fang, and again White Fang sprang in, wounding the bulldog, but the bulldog came after him slowly and steadily. He had something to do, and nothing would stop him. White Fang was confused. Dog didn't seem to notice his attacks. Then White Fang tried to knock the bulldog over. This was usually how he won his fights, his truck. But the bulldog was much shorter than the other dogs White Fang had fought. He missed the dog and lost his footing. At that instant, Cherokee's teeth gripped White Fang's throat and hung on. The crowd went wild. For the first time, it seemed that White Fang might be beaten. White Fang jumped up, tried to shake the bulldog off. He was frantic. A great weight was dragging him down, choking him. Round and round he went like a mad thing, but Cherokee knew he was doing right by hanging on. He would never let go. Each time White Fang hesitated, the bulldog sunk his teeth deeper. White Fang was getting tired. He couldn't get free, and he couldn't understand why. Then he fell. The bulldog shifted his grip, getting in closer. Those who had bet on Cherokee began to cheer. It looked as if the fight was over. At that moment, two men with a sled arrived and came over to see what was happening. White Fang had almost stopped struggling. His eyes were glazing over. Beauty knew the fight was lost and he would have to pay out a lot of money. He sprang into this ring, cursing and yelling. As White Fang lay helpless, he began kicking him. Crowd hissed at him. This was cruelty, and to his own dog. One of the newcomers, a tall young man, pushed through the crowd. Beauty was just about to give another kick when the newcomer's fist landed in his face. He staggered and fell in the snow. "Coward! Coward!" shouted the young man. Scott, in a rage, his
gray eyes flashing. He called his friend and both men bent over the dogs. The older man, Matt, took hold of White Fang. The younger man then tried to pull the bulldog's jaws apart. The crowd began to jeer. No one came to help them.
"You'll have to use a stick," said Matt.
Then Cherokee's owner, Tim Keenan, came forward.
"Don't touch my dog, stranger."
"So this is your dog," replied Scott. "Break his grip or I will."
Tim Keenan didn't move, so Scott thrust the stick into the bulldog's jaws. He worked away gently, loosening the jaws a bit at a time.
Suddenly, White Fang was free. Tim Keenan picked up the struggling Cherokee and strode away into the crowd. White Fang tried to get up, but his legs were too weak.
"He's not good," said Matt, "but he's still alive."
Scott glared at Beauty Smith.
"I'll give you $150 for him." "I ain't selling," muttered Beauty. "Oh, yes, you are," said Scott coldly.
He opened his wallet and counted out the notes.
"You don't deserve to own this dog or any dog."
Coward that he was, Beauty slunk off without a word. He knew he was beaten.
There is no taming him. Chapter 10. Scott looked at White Fang snarling at the end of his chain.
"Hopeless," he said. "He is a wolf and there is no taming him." "But look at those marks across his chest," said Matt. "I reckon he's already been tamed." "You're right," said Scott. "He must have been a sled dog before that brute Beauty Smith got hold of him."
Matt undid the chain. White Fang got up wearily, expecting to be bitten at any moment.
"Won't he try to escape?" said Matt.
"Might and might not," said Matt. "Set him free and we'll find out."
"Poor devil,"
said Scott.
"What he needs is some human kindness."
He fetched a piece of meat from the cabin and threw it at the dog. White Fang eyed it. He trusted nothing and no man. One of the sled dogs was already moving towards the meat.
"Leave it, Major,"
warned Matt. But Major took no notice and sprang forward. In a flash, White Fang struck out. Matt leaped in, but too late, and Major lay bleeding in the snow. Matt went to slap White Fang. There was another sudden leap of flash of fangs. Matt looked at his bleeding leg.
"You got me all right," he said.
"Only one thing to be done,"
said Scott sadly. He reached for his gun.
"But we've got to do it."
"Look here, Mr. Scott,"
said Matt.
"That poor creature's been through hell. You cannot expect him to be an angel overnight. He needs time."
"But it bit you," said Scott. "It's too dangerous. It but mercy to kill him."
Matt looked at White Fang.
"Give him a chance. If you don't come good, I'll kill him myself. How's that?"
"Okay," agreed Scott. "But let me try this time."
Scott went up to White Fang, who watched him warily. He'd attacked this man's dog and bitten his friend. Some terrible punishment must be coming. Scott reached out his hand. White Fang snarled and struck with the speed of a coiled snake. Scott yelped.
"That's it," cried Matt.
He dashed into the cabin and returned with the rifle.
"What are you doing?" cried Scott.
"Keeping my promise," said Matt.
"No," said Scott. "Look at him."
White Fang was now watching Matt and snarling.
"He's clever," said Scott. "He knows what you're doing."
Matt lifted the rifle and aimed. White Fang sprang sideways and tried to hide behind the cabin.
"Well, I'll be," cried Matt, amazed. "You're right. The dog is too clever to kill."
Chapter 11, Love. White Fang was wary. He was still waiting for his punishment. He watched the men. At first, they put some meat near him in the snow. He went up to it, expecting a trick, but nothing happened. He ate the meat, then one of the men came near with more meat in his hand. White Fang stared at it. Was this the trick? Bit by bit, he went up to the man, keeping his eyes firmly fixed on him. Finally, he took the meat and grilled to show he wasn't to be tricked. The man started talking to him in a soft voice. It gave White Fang a strange feeling, as if an empty space inside him was being filled. Then the hand came again. Immediately he was wary. Now it was coming, the punishment. But the man went on talking in the soft tone. White Fang was torn. The voice made him feel calm, but the hand was a threat. He snarled and flattened his ears. Nearer and nearer the hand came, and then it touched his fur. He shrank down. It followed him, stroking and patting him and rubbing his ears.
"Well, I never,"
said Matt, scratching his head puzzled. White Fang snarled at the sound of Matt's voice, but he did not leap away from the hand that was stroking him. This was the beginning of a new life for White Fang. For Scott, it meant hours of hard work and patience. For White Fang, it was the end of a life of hate. But things do not happen in a day. Scott was determined to use kindness to awaken White Fang's need to love and be loved. Once White Fang had known this with his mother, but a life of hardship and cruelty had made him unloving and unlovable. Every day Scott spent time stroking and patting him. White Fang still had his ferocious growl, but Scott noticed a new note, a purr of content. Slowly, White Fang came to trust Scott. He took it upon himself to guard his master's things, and while he was there, no man would dare to steal from his cabin. And when he was ready to work again, White Fang took leadership of the sled pack. Then something terrible happened. His master disappeared. He had noticed him packing his bags, but he had not understood what it meant. The night he stayed awake waiting in vain for his master to return. He wasn't to know that Scott had gone south to see his family. Days came and went, and still Scott didn't come back. White Fang became sick, so sick that Matt had to bring him inside the cabin. In the end, Matt wrote to Scott.
"That old wolf won't work, won't it? Ain't got no life left in him. Wants to know where you are. Reckon he'll pine away and die."
One night, Matt was reading when he was startled by a low whine from White Fang. The dog stood up and stared at the door. A few moments later, there was a footstep. The door opened and Scott stepped in.
"Where's the wolf?" he said.
Then he saw him standing near the stove. He had not run forward, but stood watching and waiting.
"Well, I never," cried Matt. "Look, he's wagging his tail."
Scott strode across the room, calling to his dog. White Fang came to him. He was awkward and shy, but as he drew closer, his eyes looked full of light. Scott squatted at his heels, face to face with his dog. He pitied him, rubbing his ears and stroking his back. White Fang responded with a funny purring growl, but that was not all. He suddenly thrust his head forward and nudged his way between his master's arm and body. "Here." All but his ears hidden from view, he nestled and snuggled. The two men looked at each other. Scott's eyes were shining.
"Did you see that?"
said Scott. "Lucky I could get back for a couple of months." With the return of his beloved master, White Fang got well quickly. He bounded out to meet the other sled dogs. Now he was king again. Chapter 12. Going Home. Something was in the air. White Fang knew it. All his senses told him that some big change was about to come.
"Listen to that, will you?"
said Matt one night. Scott listened. Through the open door came a low, anxious whine, like a sobbing under the breath. Then came a long sniff as White Fang looked at his master, checking he was still there.
"I reckon that dog's on to you,"
said Matt. Scott looked at his friend sadly.
"I can't stand any longer. I've got a new job in California."
"How could I look after a wolf dog there?" he said. He wouldn't live in a city anyway.
Matt looked at him.
That dog loves you, he said.
Scott glared across the table.
Don't make me feel bad. I've got to do what I think is best.
The truth was that Scott was torn. He was miserable at the idea of living White Fang, but he knew a dog like him needed the wide open spaces of the frozen north. 5 or 6 times he changed his mind, but in the end, he decided firmly against taking him.
Then came the day when through the cabin door, White Fang saw his master packing his bags. This was just like last time, except that this time he knew what it meant. His master was going away and leaving him behind. Inside the cabin, the two men were getting ready for bed.
He's gone off his food again, said Matt.
Don't say another word,
said Scott. The next day, White Fang's furs grew. And grew. He wouldn't leave his master's side for a second, and when Scott went inside, he stood outside by the door, watching his every move. Then Scott took his 2 large bags out of the cabin, followed by a tin box. Now there was no doubt. The terrible thing was happening. White Fang watched as 2 men arrived. They took the bags away down the hill towards the steamship port.
Scott called White Fang.
Poor fella,
said Scott, gently rubbing White Fang's ears.
I'm hitting the tray, old boy, where you can't follow. Now give me one of your growls, the last, the goodbye growl.
But White Fang wouldn't growl. He gave his master a wistful, searching look and buried his head out of sight between his master's arm and body. A ship's horn sounded.
There she blows, said Matt. You've got to go now. You don't want to miss the boat.
The 2 men closed up the cabin. Matt locked the door from inside. Came a low whining and sobbing. Scott wiped his eyes.
Take good care of him, Matt, he said. Write and let me know how he gets on.
Sure,
replied Matt. But listen to that, will you?
Both men stopped. White Fang was howling as dogs howl when their masters die. His cry burst upwards, dying down into quivering misery. A heartbreaking cry. It rose up again and again. The steamship was jammed with passengers. Near the gangplank, Scott was saying goodbye to Matt. As Matt got ready to go ashore, they had a final handshake, but Matt's hand dropped. He stared at something behind them. Scott turned to see. Sitting on the deck of the steamship, watching wistfully, was White Fang.
Did you lock the door?
Asked Scott.
Sure did,
said Matt. White Fang flattened himself to the ground, his ears back. He felt desperate. Matt tried to catch him to take him ashore, but in a second he ran off into the crowd of passengers. It was only when Scott called that he came to them. As Scott patted the dog, he noticed something. He bent in closer and saw blood on his muzzle and a fresh cut between his eyes.
You forgot the window.
He's all cut up. Must have butted his way clean through the glass. I don't believe it.
The steamship hooted its final whistle.
I'd better have him now, said Matt. Goodbye, Matt, said Scott, taking no notice. I read to you about the dog. You don't mean I do,
said Scott firmly.
I'm taking him with me.
The gangplank was hauled in and the steamship swung out from the bank. Scott waved a last goodbye to Matt on the shore. Then he bent down to White Fang.
Growl for me now, won't you? You stupid, brave fella, he said.
White Fang knew he had won. He growled and purred and nuzzled his beloved master for all he was worth. I really hope you enjoyed it.